All right, all right, all right. You know what time it is, 6 p.m. Friday night. It's time for a little Nate and TD. For right now, we're going to go to Talking with TD route. And I think it's time to really jump into this Jaguars game because, you know, there's a lot to look at from that. I think we need to review that. It's been a bit since we got to talk about it. So we're going to get into that, and then we'll get into Derrick Henry and got some clips from Adrian Peterson talking about Derrick. You're going to like the comparison, the mixture of players that the Adrian Peterson mentioned when asked about Derrick Henry. So stay tuned for that. But for right now, let's talk that Jaguars game. And for me, you know, just looking at that, the major improvement, in my opinion, was what they were able to do on third downs and also in the red zone, their defense. And I think that's a big step up for what they had done in the past. I mean, this team was on the way towards a record low as far as performance on third downs and stopping teams on third downs. 53%, that's where they are right now. And, I mean, that would be one of the worst ever. And they actually did better than that against Jacksonville. And I know it may have been just the Jaguars, but I tell you what, it's still a team that gets paid. And it's still a team in the NFL. It's a divisional game, and they held them to 35% on third down. So you gotta look at that, and that's something to build upon. And there are some reinforcements on the way too, so that's a positive thing. You know, when you look at Adoree Jackson, he's questionable for the first time, and questionable, not out. So it's like that Dumb and Dumber movie. So you're saying there's a chance? Yeah, there is a chance, but I don't think he does play on Sunday. But still. It's progress, and that's something to definitely be thankful for because, you know, this team needs as much help as they could get. And Christian Fulton looks like he's going to make his return also. So those are positive things. But Malcolm Butler as well, you know, you're getting a lot of contribution from Butler. That's been a really good thing for the defense because, you know, he's that guy that is traveling with the opposing receivers. Man. Two receptions, 16 yards for DJ Chark. That's outstanding. And both of those receptions didn't come. Technically, Butler allowed him to have one reception for 9 yards. So, you know, it's even better than what the direct box score says. And I think Ty Smith is another guy you got to shout out. These are all guys that really stepped up and did an awesome job, you know, in the secondary. And that helped. With this team, you know, being able to do what they did on third down. So we have to look at that. Excuse me. And then you look at the red zone. That's another thing that, you know, they did a good job. The Jaguars scored one time despite making 4 trips to the red zone. So those are some things that are good. I think if you flip it to the other side of the football, you have even better things going because, you know what, this isn't your dad's Titans. You know what I mean? It's a different team. This offense is exploding. They've had 30 points 4 games in a row. So that's something to look at. They're up to 30.0 average per game. So that is, just check the numbers here to tell you exactly where it is. That puts them 4th in the NFL. So you got the Packers at 31.5. See them next week. The Chiefs at 31. Seattle at 30.2, and then the Titans at 30.0. They've had 37 points per game over the last 3 games. That's their average. At home, they're averaging 31 points. On the road, it's 28 and change. So I think it's about time to recognize this defense, or excuse me, this offense is one of the top ones in the league. And I think the balance that they have is, man, it's really good, right? You know, Ryan Tannehill has a good shot at 4,000 yards passing. A.J. Brown and Corey Davis have a legitimate shot. And they'll get 1,000 yards receiving. And then Derrick Henry has an outside shot at 2,000 yards rushing. I mean, basically, you asked for it, you got it. And that's basically what this offense is. And I really think it is time to recognize them as one of the top units. And that's why you're seeing Arthur Smith get so much conversation and consideration for a head coaching job. And, you know, he's done an outstanding job. And it goes to the position coaches too, right? Rob Moore. You talk about A.J. Brown, you know, and some of the drops that he's working with. You know, he has Rob Moore to help him out. You know, a guy that has been there and done that. And they're working on, you know, tucking the ball before trying to take off, right? And looking it all into the tuck and then turning and running. And that's something that you kind of get when you have a guy like A.J. Brown, you know, who is just such a yards after catch monster, so to speak, you know. So you're going to get some of those drops, you know, just from turning and trying to make something happen with the football. Obviously, you don't want a lot of them, but it kind of comes with the territory. And then you look at Corey Davis and, you know, the work that Rob Moore has done with him, and having Mike Vrabel come over and help out in the ball disruption period, you know, that's really paid off. You see him being able to make those combat catches, right? And that game against the Browns was a good example of that, you know, catching the ball in traffic for the touchdown. So that's been something to be excited about. But I want to see what happens with the number three receiver, right? Adam Humphries isn't there for now. And, you know, Cam Batson, what, 13? I think it's 13 targets, 13 receptions. So he's become money for Ryan Tannehill. And Khalif Raymond, you want to see him start to reemerge also. And he's that vertical guy for them. So that's something they're going to have to work on. Jonnu Smith as well. He's someone that, you know, I highlighted in my Whiteboard Wednesday video. And I really, you know, think it's time to get him involved again. And that's going to be important for this team. So those are some of the things to consider. But by all means, this is a top-level offense. And although I wouldn't put them right there with the Chiefs, you know, or the Packers, anyone else, I think that they could go against and you know, hold their own as far as a conversation about, you know, being a better offense. Seattle, I think they're just as good as Seattle. But, again, it goes back to the balance. And I dare I say it, this is the most balanced team in the league. I think it's the most balanced offense in the league. I don't think that there's really a dispute there, because when you have a guy like Derrick Henry that could take over a game rushing the football, and you have a guy like Ryan Tannehill who is, in my opinion, a high-end game manager, he'll win you a game, you know, if you put it on him, but that's not exactly what the game plan is structured to do. You know, it's structured for balance. But to have both of those guys there and the assortment of weapons, I think you could legitimately call that offense one of the top offenses in the league. So, like I said, it's not your dad's Titans. This is a whole different ball game, and that's a testament to all the things that they have going on there. So we're going to go to a break. When we come back, I think it's time to talk a little bit about Derrick Henry and his quest for 2,000 yards, and we need to get that talk with Adrian Peterson. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back. I inspect view through the future, see millennium. Killer bees sold 50 gold, 60 platinum. Shackling the matches with drastic rap tactics. Graphic displays. All right, back from the break, talking with TD. We're going to change this to the Nate and TD show eventually, but for right now, that's what we're doing. We're talking with TD. And as I said before we went on the break, I wanted to get into Derrick Henry and that quest for 2,000 yards. And, you know, here's the deal. It's obtainable, but it's going to take an awful lot. I mean, we're talking about an average of 156 yards per game over these last three games. It'll be a good opportunity to cut into what he needs this week against that Lions defense. They're fifth in the NFL or the fifth worst rushing defense in the NFL. So I think the main thing for Derrick Henry and that offensive line is to get him out on those explosive runs. And the reason why that's so important is because you also want to balance the carries. You want to try to keep this guy from getting, you know, 370, 380 carries. I think he's on pace for 376. So that obviously is a big number. That's a number that a lot of guys have gotten to, and there was a significant amount of drop-off afterward in that following year. And I think with him, you want to get those yards. So if you could get him to get explosive, he has 12 runs of 20 yards or more. That's the most in the NFL. Now, he's tied for second in the NFL with two runs of 40 yards or more. So there is a good opportunity to get him going. And we got Nate coming in. And Nate, I want to get your opinion when you look at Derrick Henry and what he's got in front of him as far as that 2,000-yard plateau. Do you think that he has a good possibility of doing it?
Oh, yeah, definitely, without a doubt. I think here's the thing. As I've stated before, when you look at this offense and their scheme of what they want to get accomplished, they're a physical run football team. And their persistence throughout a game and their ability to stick with their game plan of being that physical run football team with Derek's size, as I've stated before, this is just what wears on teams. You know, we look at accomplishments of having a first-team defense or a top run-fitting defense. But when you look at a guy like Derrick Henry running at 6'4", 6'5", 240 pounds, you know, it's just physics in itself. You know, nobody's going to want to stand in front of that for 60 minutes and take that pounding for a full game, you know. So that persistence of that game plan and the ability of what Derrick brings to the table in itself, I think it definitely presents the opportunity for him to go over 2,000 yards and do what he needs to do here in these last three games to, you know, surpass that. I think he's has the ability. And I think throughout these games, you know, as we've stated before, when it comes to third quarter, when it comes to fourth quarter, you're looking at a 80-plus yard back still in the backyard. I mean, in the backfield, willing to do damage.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, when you have a guy that's so big and so strong and so fast, it definitely makes for a good opportunity to get those yards. And the thing is, it's a lot similar to Adrian Peterson back when he had that 2K. And they were going down the stretch, and he was the guy that they relied upon to make their offense go. And that's something that you have to look at. And that run that Adrian Peterson had, they just continued to feed him and feed him and feed him the football. So he got multiple opportunities because it wasn't just a matter of getting him the carries to get the record. It was a matter of, yo, we need to get him the carries so we can win football games. And I think that's what the Titans are facing now. So naturally, with the Titans playing the Lions, we had an opportunity to talk to Adrian Peterson about Derrick Henry. So I have a couple clips here that I want to pull. The first one we're going to go with, and it just is kind of focusing on how Adrian Peterson had to carry that team and some of the things that he sees similar between his situation and Derrick's situation.
Yeah, you know, of course, you know, now that I've been watching this young guy for a couple of years, it's like he's definitely showing that, you know, he is that next best thing, you know. So as far as torch me and bash, you know, I can't say that I want to – that's something that I want to do. But he's taking it, you know. Based on, you know, how he has produced, you know, over the past, you know, few years and, you know, how unstoppable, you know, he's been, especially this year. It's amazing just to see him do his thing. And, you know, I went to that game with just, you know, not really worried about, you know, getting into the club or, you know, breaking a record. It was all about, you know, helping my team advance to the playoffs, you know, and you know, that's how you ultimately come out and accomplish great things. Just going out there and playing fast, playing hard, and focusing on trying to win the game. You know, he is a huge part of their offense. So I feel like as long as he, you know, focus on that, then things will fall in place for him over the next couple of weeks.
And that's the thing. As you said, he's a huge part of the offense, Nate. So it's almost like they have to give him the football in order for them to win.
Definitely. I want to correct myself here, too, because it's going to be very, very interesting here with the last game. Due to the situations that the Titans are in, you know, they have probably, you know, two more games of very competitive ball if – you know, they put themselves in position. So it's going to be interesting with their last game, what they're going to be doing with their starters, you know, whether they're going to be playing them and giving them, you know, the full gusto against, you know, Houston and the opportunity, or is it just going to be, you know, two games and sitting in front of him to do so? obviously that'll take down an opportunity. But, you know, I think it's still an opportunity there within the two games for him to get plenty enough, you know, chances to get the touches that he needs to surpass 2,000 yards. And as Adrian stated, I think it's a unique situation in which, you know, this is not an offense that's going to be predicated on him just surpassing or becoming a part of the club. It's definitely going to be a game plan opportunity with, you know, Derek, that they, this is what they do, you know. So it's definitely going to be a situation where he's placed in, where he can just be able to play football and give his team an opportunity to win the game, as Adrian stated, and not look forward to, you know, just surpassing the 2,000 yards or being focused on that alone.
Yeah, and it's – I just want to see how it plays out, because you are right in what you said about that last game. Can you imagine if that game is a 1 p.m. game and the Colts one is at 4? Can you imagine that?
Oh, my goodness. It's definitely going to be wild.
They're going to have to play the starters in that case, because they don't know if the Colts – or they're going to have – yeah, I would say they have to play the starters and get off to a comfortable lead, and then they could try to cruise if they want to do that, because – you know, the fact of the matter is, every game the Colts win, every time the Colts win, they have to win. And that's the only way that they will stay at least as the number four seed. So, it's playing out pretty well. Now, one of the other things I wanted to bring up was what Adrian Peterson said about Derrick Henry. And, you know, everyone likes to play the comparison game. And it's interesting to ask guys, you know, who a particular player reminds them of. Adrian Peterson had a pretty interesting comment when asked about Derrick Henry. Check this out.
Combination of any two guys is
combination. I would say the first person that came to mind was Eddie George. Remember, Eddie George is a guy that he kind of reminds me of, and Terrell, like maybe a combination between him and so Terrell Davis. I know. Probably a lot of people wouldn't think that, but you know, he's really you know, quick on his feet, you know, and he his cuts are really nice, precise. Half the time it don't look like he's running really hard, but he is, you know. It's a big stature, you know, 340 pounds. But those would be the guys, you know. Eddie George, because of the height and the size, and you know, Eddie was obviously a great back. And then Terrell Davis, just, you know, the vision that he used with how he was just like finesse when he ran the ball.
Now, when you can ask a future Hall of Famer about a guy, and he'll mention a Hall of Famer and a guy who is right there on the cusp of it, I think that's pretty high praise for Derrick Henry. So I wanted to play that so the listeners could hear what he said. And it's not just, oh, TD said that. No. That was Adrian Peterson, AD, saying that. But I wanted to also get something from you, because, you know, you were around for Chris Johnson's 2K. What was that like going down the stretch?
Yeah, man, I'm glad you asked me about this, because I talk to CJ all the time, and I tell him he need to start giving me and Kenny a little more credit. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, we had one of the best offensive lines in the game at the time with Michael Roos and Kevin Mawai and those guys. You know, it was definitely something that, you know, those guys up front definitely put their effort and all into making sure that CJ had an opportunity. You know, and CJ in itself, you know, the way he approached the game and what he brought every Sunday, you know, there's no telling when that 80-yard or 60-yard run was coming throughout the game, but it was almost an assurance that you knew it was coming, you know. But as I stated, I'm joking about it, but you definitely need guys on the outside, you know. When you look at these 30 and 30-plus yard runs, you know, when these guys break into the open field like that, you have to have receivers on the outside that are willing and accountable, you know, to go down and get these blocks downfield and be held accountable down the field, because a lot of times these are the guys who make the tackles when you're looking at the 20-plus yard runs. DBs and the safeties that may be defending or coming downhill. So to get a hat on those guys, you know, you have to commend every guy on the offense. You know, I seen a statement from the Kelce brother the other day about – you know, the impact of team in our sport and how much it's important to have a full team of guys, no matter how, you know, impactful your one guy may be, it's going to take a full team to get these things done. And I'm pretty sure as much as Derek, you know, definitely deserves the accolades of what he has going on and everything he's been accomplishing, he'll tell you firsthand, you know, this is impossible without, you know, this offensive line and the things that they've been able to accomplish with the interchange and guys with the injuries, and also, you know, with these receivers on the outside, and not only their playmaking ability and giving Derek still an opportunity to face a seven-man box instead of an eight-man box, because you still have to be accountable on the outside facing Derek and Corey, both on both sides, you know. So their ability in the pass game and in the run game is going to affect Derek's ability to continue to be successful. And, you know, as being a guy that was in an offense with a 2,000-yard back, it just takes patience and persistence. You know, it was a lot of days out there that me and Kenny Britt may have thought that we had a good game or a good matchup, but then you look up and you look in the backfield and you have one of the most elite backs in the game at the time. You know, you have to make sure that he's present at the time. So it's definitely a unique situation, but I think it's a team effort. You know, everybody out there must be accountable. And as much as it's on the running back and the guy that has the ball at the time, it's going to take a full team effort to make sure that guy is as much as successful as he possibly can be.
And it's good that you mentioned that, because that's something that Derrick Henry says all the time. He doesn't take the personal accolades, you know, the credit for that stuff. He always says his offensive line. And that's why he bought them Rolexes last year. You know, he bought them the video game, the arcade game. This year. And it's just, yeah. I mean, that's what he does for the guys. We'll see what he does for Christmas. I'm sure he has something up his sleeve, but that's just, it is a team, and it does take all 11. Ryan Tannehill, if he looks and sees that it's a bad situation, he has to check out of it and check into something. Or, you know, if he sees that the play that's called is good, he's going to let that thing roll, and that's what happens. And then you look at the offensive line, the receivers. How many times do you see Derrick Henry running down the field and Corey Davis blocking or A.J. Brown escorting him, Cam Batson helping him out? You know, you look at the Ravens game, Khalif Raymond getting a key block just beyond the second level. I mean, these are all things that happen that lead to Henry being able to do that. So that 2,000 yards, if they get that, that's a team accomplishment. And Derrick Henry will be the first to tell you that. So I'm glad you brought that up and you pointed the listeners into that direction. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, it's time to flip it to the other side of the football. I think we need to talk about this pass rush and the return of a couple DBs that's very possible. Breathe. I like that, Kenny. Definitely is. Back
from the break. Yes, sir.
Speaking of Reed, that's what the quarterback has plenty of time to do in the pocket. You know, when this Titans pass rush is in pursuit, we're talking about 14 sacks, and it's week 15. So, Nate, I got to ask you, man, is it time to hang up hopes about the pass rush, or should these Titans fans feel like it could come together over these next 3 weeks?
Man, my mother raised me to believe that God was a shot clock type of God. He could come in 3-2-1. So, I mean, that's your best bet, man. But other than that, you know, with as they say, the film doesn't lie, man. I mean, you look at 14 weeks of consistency and it just hasn't been there, unfortunately, with this pass rush. And I think the most unfortunate part situation of it is when you looked at this defense in preseason training camp, because they didn't have a real preseason. But when you looked at this team in training camp, you know, especially with the addition of Jadeveon Clowney, Vic Beasley in the beginning, you know, this front seven was what everybody was having their hopes on. This front seven and their ability to impact not only the run game, but to get, you know, some heat on the quarterback was what everybody was excited about. You know, it actually was an opportunity for this team to turn into the team that was now racking up all the sacks and creating all the turnovers on defense. And to not have it happen, I think is definitely just unfortunate. You know, schematically, personnel wise, whatever the situation may be at hand, you know, when you turn on this film, they just haven't been able to get home. Jeffrey's obviously been playing solid throughout the year and been making some great plays. I think Harold's done an awesome job of coming along and making some splash plays and creating some havoc. But even his consistency in itself, it just hasn't been there enough to create the consistent pass rush that this team is going to need to be successful in the playoffs, in my opinion. And they're going to have to find a way. This is now the fourth quarter, as they say, of the season, the last four games. And you're definitely going to have to be in a snowball effect, if you will, to get some things going heavily into the playoffs so that you will know what you're working with. When you're facing these teams that are high impact, and you look at the AFC situation right now with your top dogs being Pittsburgh and Kansas City, you know, these teams are heavy pass offense type of teams. So if you're looking at being successful here in the playoffs and you can't get to the quarterback and you can't make plays as a impact with your pass rush, there's going to be something that's going to have to adjust with the schematics of what they're trying to accomplish. And they're definitely going to have to find a way to get home to the quarterback.
And that's the big thing, because last year they made it all the way. We know the story. They made it to the AFC Championship game. That first part of the game, it looked like they were all the way up until that point where Patrick Mahomes was able to move around. Then he ran because no one had contained, and you had a series of a poor tackling effort. And next thing you know, he has the touchdown. They have the lead, and that just changed the whole ball game. And coming out of that game, that was the thing. Okay, all this Titans team needs to do is just get help at the pass rush category. And to John Robinson's credit, he went out and he signed. Well, I probably would have signed Marcus Golden instead of Vic Beasley. But, I mean, look, that's neither here nor there. He brought in Jadeveon Clowney. And that was supposed to be the one that was going to. I mean, I remember on this very podcast, we played 99 Problems by Jay-Z. And we said 99 Problems, but a pass rush ain't one. Well, it's a different ball game. It's definitely one, and that's something that they have to get together. And, you know, I keep hearing people say, oh, well, they didn't even draft a pass rusher. I challenge anyone to tell me a rookie this year that has had an impact as a pass rusher. There aren't any.
Right.
Kalyvon Chaisson, 2 sacks. I mean, tell me someone else. You know, my man from Penn State. No, he's not doing anything with Carolina either. You know, so I think they did just about the best that they could. It obviously didn't end up being good enough. But at the same time, you need help in the back end to help the front end. And not having a Dory Jackson has hurt. Christian Fulton, the guy that you know, had first-round pick qualifications. He was a second-round pick. He's been hurt. So I have to ask you, and those guys, I mean, Adore's listed as questionable. I doubt that he plays, but when he eventually does return, I mean, is that going to help that pass rush? When Christian Fulton returns, is that going to help the pass rush?
Well, ironically enough, we looked at this team earlier in the beginning of the season, and, you know, I think the huge complaint was the secondary and the lack of help and the lack of experience that they may have had at the time. But you look here in this last game and these last couple games, actually, the secondary is the one starting to make the plays.
Yeah.
They're closing in. You know, I think they've had a couple lapses here and there. And that happens. You know, I've spoken about this previously about your cornerbacks have to have the most confidence on your team because they're going to get beat. You know, it's inevitable. They're going to have defensive penalties. They're going to get beat. It's inevitable. So to have them come out there and continue to compete at a high level mentally is the most important thing that you can possibly have. So I definitely can see Adoree and Christian definitely creating an impact of a bit of energy, maybe juice on the back end that can trickle down to this front seven. But as I stated before, you know, the ability to cover in the back end is always going to show presence in your front seven. Mm-hmm. But in the same aspect, these guys have to get home. These guys have to get home. There's been a couple of instances here, especially like I've stated in these last couple of games, of seeing this secondary come together and having more continuity and confidence to see them making plays on the ball. And they're making, you know, the ability to cover these receivers downfield a little more understandable and knowing the concepts and giving this defensive line a little bit more time. But I just still haven't seen them getting there. And you can only put so much on the back seven, I mean, on your back four, your defensive backs. You can only put so much on those guys to where they're going to be able to sustain and hold for so long. When you look at quarterbacks running around and the dual threat quarterbacks that you have in this league, you know, that creates a lot of problem for a defensive back, no matter how good they are. I don't care if they're a Dory or Christian, Malcolm Butler or Deion Sanders out there. It's going to be an issue for a guy has a quarterback that's able to run around in the backfield, create longer time, make play, make it moves, and then throw the ball, you know. So it doesn't matter if Adoree comes back and Christian comes back and creates an impact on the back end, if this front seven still doesn't find a way to get home. As I've stated, I don't know whether it's a personnel issue with, you know, the injuries that they faced and the way that they may have scripted and organized this defense with the additions that they placed on the team at the beginning of the year. But there's going to have to be some adjustments made. There's going to have to be some adjustments made in order to get this front seven home so that even when Adoree and Christian does come back and impacts the back end, that those things are just all pick up. And this defense will go where the route and the direction that we expected them to go in the beginning of the season.
And that's the thing. These guys are frustrated. You know, Jack Crawford, we got to talk to him today. And I asked him just straight up, you know, what are some of the things that are being discussed in order to help you guys be able to get home more? And he said he didn't really go into detail, but he said those conversations are being had and they're working on things. But, you know, the main thing that he said is they're all frustrated and they're holding themselves to a higher level than, you know, anyone else can. But it's just not happening the way it needs to. So there are some teams in this playoff picture that, you know, could sling that thing around, and you really need to be able to get after that quarterback and impact him and bring him down, you know, and make him understand that it's going to be a long day. And that's an area where they have to improve. So I wanted to get your opinion on Fulton and Jackson and if they could help. So we're going to go to a break. We're going to come back. I think on the other end of this, we need to look at the playoff picture, look at some percentages, and we'll definitely give our key matchups. Nate and TD. Hey, Nate, man, you know, it is a Friday night, and it's not usual that we could say there's football the next day, but guess what, man? There's a game tomorrow. There's actually a doubleheader.
Two games.
And you can catch that on ESPN 94.9 tomorrow starting at 3 p.m. You got the Bills, Broncos, and Packers, Panthers doubleheader, so make sure you tune into that. You know why? Because it's a double bonus, right? You get to see the Bills, which is a team that could possibly be an opponent in the playoffs down the line, and then you get to see the Packers, who will be next week's opponent. So it gives you a chance to get a little scouting in for all you folks that love to do that. And speaking of the Bills and the playoffs, I want to look at this playoff picture real quick and look at some percentages, because I thought it was pretty interesting how everything has kind of panned out, you know, especially after the Steelers losing two straight games. So they've fallen to the number two seed. They've clinched the playoffs, and they have a 99% chance of winning the division. They're the number two seed. Chiefs are number one. The Bills are at number three. They have a 98.9% chance of winning the playoffs and winning the division. What about the Titans? The Titans are sitting at the fourth seed. 95.6% chance to make the playoffs. So it's basically going to be postseason time in a few weeks for this Titans team. 63.7% chance of winning the division. That's the thing that's so interesting to me, because as we talked earlier, the Colts, every game they win, the Titans have to win. That margin for error is very, very slim. And the Colts have a date with the Steelers. So that's going to, and it's actually the same time the Titans are playing the Packers. So that's going to be an interesting week next week. And the Colts, their chances are 87.3% to make the playoffs, 36.3% to win the division. A few of the other teams, The Browns, sure, that's of interest. They have a 1.2% chance of winning the division. But right now they're the 5 seed with an 86.5% chance of making the playoffs. So with them being the 5 seed and the Titans being the 4 seed, you might have a rematch of that game a few weeks ago. So, you know, the big payback, to use the James Brown phrase. So that's something to watch. And, oh, did you see Marcus Mariota last night?
Man, did I see him. I was so excited, man. I was ecstatic as soon as, unfortunately, the injury to Derek happened. And just knowing about the opportunity that he was possibly about to have, I was excited. But to see how the outcome of how he played last night was just definitely outstanding, heartwarming. And to see it all panning out for a guy after he's had a rough situation at that position is definitely great.
Yeah, yeah. And just the outpouring of love on Twitter from Titans players. Mike Vrabel today, he said that, you know, it's absolutely easy to root for Marcus Mariota, and it was good seeing him out there having fun. So the Raiders, they are on the outside looking in, though, at 7-7. You know, at one point, they were like a 5 seed, but, you know, they've dropped some games, and now they have a 4.6% chance of making the playoffs. They got beat. The Chargers beat them. You know, and I mention that because there is a growing thought that Anthony Lynn will not be with the Chargers any longer after the season. And the belief is that Arthur Smith is a good match for that organization. And they look at what he's done here with Ryan Tannehill. Now, Coach Art, he won't hear any of that. He's focused on you know, doing what he has to do with the Titans. But the fact of the matter is, as I mentioned in the opening segment, this offense is one of the top units in the league. So what are your thoughts on Coach Arthur Smith? Do you think that he's at that point where he could take over an organization and be their CEO?
Well, I'll say this. I spoke with Arthur right after he was announced as the Titans offensive coordinator. And I called him, and the first thing I said to him was, Arthur, man, I never knew you had aspirations to take it this far. And he said, Nate, you know, I've always been a student of the game. I've always loved it. And the more opportunities that they will give me, I'm willing and ready to seize those opportunities. And this is a guy, as you stated, very humble, very humble. So I don't even think this type of banter about him possibly becoming a head coach even registers to him right now, because he's probably locked in on his next week and his next opportunity. That's just what type of guy he is. That's his approach to learning. I was actually flabbergasted in some ways when he first had the job and we spoke, because he also was like, you know, I just want you to know the table's always open. Also for you to, if you ever need to contact me, you see anything going on, I would love your opinion. Mm-hmm. And that's just what type of guy he is. He's very, very much open to taking criticism, taking constructive criticism, allowing things to come to the table that he may not have recognized at the time from someone else, and helping him and his team advance in the proper way that they need to go. And I think when you have a guy like that, you know, those type of organizations that may be in dismay right now can find leadership in a guy like that, because he understands that the most important thing is to bring along a culture of winning, and whatever must be done to win and stick together will be done. I think he's a man of the players, but he's also understood that his personality in itself definitely says coach, you know, but I think it's time. You know, he's definitely been along the trenches. I've spoke previously throughout this season on the show about, you know, the coaches that he's been up under, yeah, and the ability to learn from these guys. And I think it's just it's created an opportunity for Art, whether they seen it coming or not, that he definitely deserves the opportunity to go out there and lead someone's organization, show that he can be a great leader, not only just for offense and a specific group with the tight ends or the quarterbacks, or impacting Ryan Tannehill, but impacting a full team of men and leading them on to the promised land. I definitely think he deserves that opportunity moving forward.
No doubt about it. I agree with you. And it's going to be bittersweet, because I do like, you know, having Coach Art here. You know, he's especially when we have the in-person pressers, you know, it's no problem to pull him aside afterwards and talk to him a bit. And he's been great for this team. But, you know, when you do so well, you have to move on to the next level, and I think that's there for him. We're going to breeze through the key matchups here because we're up against it. I'll give my key matchup on offense. You could give yours on defense. I don't really think predictions are something. I mean, I would imagine we both are pretty strong in our thoughts that the Titans will win this game. But I want to look at the rushing attack that the Lions have, and obviously Adrian Peterson, but more importantly, DeAndre Swift. He's a guy that this Titans team, you know, was interested in. He was linked to the Titans at one point. And this run defense for the Titans over the last three games, they've only given up 83 yards per game. So it's obviously, you know, coming together. You got David Long coming downhill and playing well, and the guys up front, and Simmons, and now T.R. Tar will be back as well. So I think that's going to be an area of focus, an area to look at, how those two things match up, especially if Matt Stafford doesn't play. Well, what are your thoughts on the defense, Nate? Any particular things stand up matchup-wise?
Well, I think obviously they're going to have to be able to take care of this linebacker core that I think that's the only thing that really sticks out to me in this defense from the Lions, Jamie Collins, and what he's able to bring, his sustainability to the table. He plays the run good. He's had some lapses here in the past game. But, you know, I think he's definitely obviously the guy that I would look to impact the game for the Titans, that they would definitely need to keep an eye on. But other than that, as you stated, you know, here with the prediction of the score, I think this is a game that the Titans should look forward to dominating and doing what they're supposed to from the start out, and pretty much getting this team out of there early.
Now, before we get out of here, I need a little music for my guy, Kenny, who's providing us with these bumps. Kenny, let me hear that soundtrack. Every week, Nate, every Friday, I have to come up with something that makes me go, And I'm taking it off of watching that game last night. And not even watching the game, but seeing the comments afterwards. Because it really makes me go, Because anytime the Chargers win and Justin Herbert does really well, no credit goes to Anthony Lynn, but let them lose. He's the worst coach in the history of football. It's kind of interesting how that works. And, you know, the other thing that makes me go, is Justin Herbert is a much better quarterback than most of us thought he was at Oregon. But for some reason, nobody says anything about his position coach, Pep Hamilton. That just makes me go,
I mean, it's unfortunate. I think a lot of it actually is just a depiction on the head coaches. In all honesty, you know, there's definitely a disarrangement of African-American head coaches in the NFL. And that's just the way it goes. You know, a lot of times when these guys get into the form of leadership, you know, a lot of the times, you know, the success goes to someone else and the defeat goes exactly to that man. I've commended, you know, it's funny having a relationship with Mike Tomlin, because, you know, you hear a lot of those things and you've seen it with him, but his sustainability throughout this time has just been immaculate with the Pittsburgh Steelers. But definitely when you look at Anthony Lynn and what he's been able to do with that team and their evolvement, even after losing Tyrod Taylor at the beginning of the year, and the experience that he had, and to have the ability of drafting Justin and to have the confidence to throw him out there as early as they did and to compete the way that they've been able to compete this year. I definitely think he deserves a lot more credit than what he's been given. But, you know, too much is given, much is required. And I think he'll tell you firsthand, you know, sitting at home amongst his peers, I'm pretty sure he'll feel slighted. But when he stands in front of that podium, there's no greater feeling that he knows that he definitely has the respect of a lot of men out there that accompany himself in this industry. And I think that's the most important thing. It's very reminiscent of my career. You know, I can stand on a podium all day and cry and whine about how I felt like I wasn't recognized nationally, felt like I was bashed, but I know I've gained the respect of my peers. And I think, you know, that's what you most have to be in tune to when you're in that type of position, just to be respectful to the thing that you've been able to bring to the table.
No doubt about it. Time's up, folks. Appreciate you tuning in. Nate, as always, appreciate you. Glad we got you in here and get that insight. We're going to keep it moving. Titans will beat the Lions on Sunday. We'll be back to talk about it next week. God bless. Good night.